and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian Laura Zara-Papinski, and today my guest is author Kate Hope Day. Her new book, In the Quick, is about a young, ambitious female astronaut whose life is upended by a love affair that threatens the rescue of a lost crew. It's a brilliantly imagined novel in the tradition of Station Eleven and The Martian, and I think listeners are going to really enjoy it. So Kate Hope Day, welcome to A Bookish Home, and congrats on the new book.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, this was just such a compelling read. It's one that I stayed up late into the night finishing because I just had to know what happened to all these characters. So I would just love to hear a little bit from you about the novel, the main character, and I just would also love to hear about the inspiration behind it because it's such a interesting sort of world that you've imagined.
Yeah. I have to start by saying, since I'm speaking to a librarian, that I really wrote the book I wanted to read with this one. I was sort of hungering for a story about a kind of persistent woman astronaut, and that's sort of what I ended up doing. So, it's funny. I think some books you enter into as a sort of writer first, you have kind of writerly questions, and other books you come to, and I do tend to be this way in general, you come to them first as what you want to read and you know, your identity as a reader. But let me tell you a little bit about where the idea for this book came from. My first novel, If Then, was a multi-point of view story, and so it was in third person, and so I had in my mind that I really wanted to do something more intimate, to write in first person, to follow one character over, you know, many years of their life. And aside from just that general, you know, intuition that that's what I wanted to do for my next book, I didn't you know, have a whole lot of ideas until one day, and I, you know, I don't really know how to explain it any other way, but June, the main character, she just showed up in my mind and started telling me things about herself. And that sort of coincided with, you know, it happened to be a time when my two boys were pretty obsessed with Mars rovers. And this was a few years ago when the sort of, I think, second or third rover got to Mars and was taking pictures. And, you know, we were watching a lot of videos of the International Space Station and astronauts doing sort of, you know, normal things, but in zero gravity, like eating and, you know, trying to bathe and fixing things and looking out the cupola at Earth. And I think those two things kind of came together. But if I kind of interrogate myself a little bit about the whole character just appeared in your mind, June shares a sort of quality that is something that that's a quality that I find in characters that are my favorite in literature, the characters that I, you know, keep coming back to, who kind of exist in my mind years after I first encountered them. And they all kind of share this peculiar quality. They're characters that kind of get in their own way, who create hardship for themselves simply by being who they are. For me, Jane Eyre is the quintessential example, but there's a lot of great ones. I'm thinking of Becky Sharp, Elizabeth Salander, Arthur Less from television, Fleabag. And there are these characters who, you know, they just can't help but kind of get into these sticky situations, and you love them, but you also are shaking your head at them at the same time.
I love that. And as I was reading, because Jane Eyre is a favorite of mine, I kept sort of thinking, oh, wait, is that a reference? Is that a reference? And then that was going to be one of my questions for you. If you had had Jane Eyre in your mind, is that part of why her name is June, or is that a coincidence?
Yes, for much of my drafting process, her name was Jane. And I, at a certain point, I had the idea of writing something that was a very loose retelling of Jane Eyre. And sort of the further I got into the book, the more loose it got. So my editor likes to say that the Jane Eyre references are kind of like Easter eggs. It's not a huge component of the book, but if you love Jane Eyre, you'll definitely see them. Yeah. But yeah, at a certain point, I sort of a little too close to Jane Eyre, and I changed her name to June, and that felt immediately right. Maybe because at the end of the novel, she's sort of like flowered in a way, kind of come into her own. And June makes me think of, you know, springtime flowers and things like that. But yeah, the initial idea was something like, I think I pitched to my agent, Jane Eyre in space. And I said to her, I was like, that's either the worst idea or the best idea. Like, I want to find out
what works.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to hear a little bit, because I know you had said that you were interested in sort of the almost everyday tasks and experiences of being in space. And that's one of the things I loved about the book. I feel like and again, maybe this is sort of being able to be in space like through a woman's experience, but I felt so close to her experience of just arriving there. And you know, what would it be like to be the new one on board trying to figure out how everything works and how to do everything up there? And
yes, that's definitely the part of the book that was just, you know, both a challenge and a joy to write. I'll sort of start by saying that I came to the book kind of loving movies about space, but also kind of being interested in interrogating their image of space a little bit, because, you know, we have this idea of astronauts, you know, from the movies and from some books and television, in these sort of pristine, white, shiny, modern spaces, and they're sort of floating in this peaceful way in a spacesuit, or, you know, in a, you know, sort of very clean uniform. And that really kind of butted up against what I had read in memoirs of, you know, life on the International Space Station, or watching videos of everyday life there, that, you know, actual life in space is a whole lot kind of dirtier, smellier. It's a whole lot more, you know, fixing things that are breaking constantly. There's nothing really kind of, you know, it's loud in the International Space Station. There's all these sort of whirrings and, you know, the sound of the vents. And I just really liked the idea of the juxtaposition that is inherent for an astronaut. You're in this very tight space, and that's the case in my book as well. And you're, you know, kind of in among just a few people, but you're really in close quarters with them. And, you know, your own body is kind of become strange because you don't have gravity, and you have kind of bizarre symptoms that happen when, you know, your organs are floating instead of having gravity, and your blood is sort of rushed to your head, and you have, like, you know, swollen fingers with fluid and things like that. The juxtaposition of that very kind of deeply physical, often uncomfortable experience of being in space, and, you know, looking out the window and seeing this, like, vastness and, you know, the Earth from the window of, for instance, the International Space Station, sort of the tension between those two things, the kind of, like, cramped, really kind of, oh, I'm very much in my body, but I can look out this window and see this thing that's, you know, just vast and very disembodied. The other thing I would love to tell you about is the specific research that I did to sort of get at some of these really specific sensory details. I read a lot of space memoirs. I read Scott Kelly's Year in Space memoir called Endurance. I read some other Russian diaries and memoirs. And, you know, I watched a lot of YouTube videos. But there was something that I wasn't getting at. So I really wanted to get at what it felt like to live in space. And I wasn't quite getting there with just reading and watching, you know, documentaries and things like that. So I did something truly out of character. And I signed myself up for space camp. And yes, adults can go.
I had no idea.
You know, originally, yes, it's true. I didn't either. I sort of looked into it to see if maybe I could sort of take one of my kids and kind of research on the side sort of thing, and found out, yes, actually adults can go. They have an adult program and you get to do all the sort of simulated missions that they do with the kids, but kind of scaled up for, you know, adult participants. And, you know, I am not a natural kind of like engineer. I don't have a background with that. And I also am an introvert. So the idea of like doing camp, you know, big group activities was not like the most comfortable idea for me. But I really wanted to get at some things like, what does it feel like to be in a spacesuit? And sort of what do these controls feel like when you actually sort of have them, you know, in your hands, or you're actually using them. So I was really lucky and got to do a simulated spacewalk. And the way they do that there is you put on a suit, you put on the helmet, you have these big gloves and these big boots, and they tether you to this really long cord that's from to the ceiling, and you kind of float above this decommissioned NASA shuttle. And I had this simulated mission where I had to fix a control panel at the other end of the shuttle. And so I'm, you know, kind of like floundering in the air, trying to figure out how to move, you know, when I don't have my feet on the ground and I, you know, don't really have anything to pull myself along with. So I sort of, you know, half crawled, half swam my way, and I managed to do the simulated repair. And I had this just entirely euphoric, you know, feeling after I did it, even though it's really, I mean, it's kind of silly because it's not real, but I got a little of what it really feels like, I think. And so much of that made it into the book.
Well, I even just as you're talking, I'm like, oh, I remember her describing trying to get around the spaceship as half crawling, half swimming. So that really comes through. And I think that's one of the reasons I couldn't put it down. Just I really felt like I was there. And to the extent that I felt like my heart was racing at times, just like, oh, I feel claustrophobic. Like, I need to get out of here. Like, really transports you. So I love that. Well, and it made me wonder too, you know, after you've researched and everything, what is your writing process like? Did you have sort of like the plot or pantser question? Did you have like a very detailed outline? Did you know where you were going, or was it a little bit more just kind of seeing where it was going to take you?
Yeah, I really kind of chart a middle course between being a plotter and a pantser. I find if I outline things too extensively, I get bored and just don't want to write the book. So there has to be some level of discovery as I go along. So my first novel, I kind of was just learning as I went. So I did a lot of different things and had many, many drafts. But my second novel, In the Quick, and the novel I'm working on right now, I've gotten pretty comfortable with a sort of method where I write about 30,000 words, you know, really loose. I am not editing at all, very free write form. And it'll be just a little bit of everything that's been hanging around in my head. You know, within The Quick, I had the idea for June for almost a year before I ever wrote anything, because I had made this deal with myself that I had to write my first novel before I could write this character who was in my mind. And it was a fantastic motivator. But the way it worked out is by the time I got to actually writing, I had just a ton in my brain. It was almost sort of like just emptying my brain onto the page. But I find that that's kind of what I need. I need about 30, 40,000 words to kind of get myself rolled in the main characters, in the sort of questions I want to ask and explore. And that's the point at which I sort of, you know, have to stop. I just can't be one of those people who writes a whole big, you know, whole full messy draft. That's too much mess for me. So that's sort of when the type A person kicks in, and I go back and I kind of look at what I have. And that's the point at which I start to do some plot work and think about, you know, structure, think about what are my major plot points? What's the midpoint of the book? I start to do some visual drawing of the structure of the book. I tend to do plot charts for every major character. And then I do a lot of thinking about the sense of, you know, what happens to the characters in terms of their development, intellectual, emotional development over the course of the novel. And then once I have kind of a sense of where I'm going, then I'll go back and start turning some of that free write material into actual scenes.
That's so interesting. And, you know, I know you had said when you had sort of had the idea of writing this, that it was a book that you would like to read. You know, are there books and authors, I know you mentioned some that were kind of inspiring the character, but are there books and authors that you really feel like have influenced your writing or shaped the kind of books that you want to write?
Yes. First, I have to sort of talk about my beloved Victorian novels, because I came at writing in this little bit of a left turn. I don't have an MFA. I actually got a PhD in literature and was planning on being a professor and, you know, writing essays about George Eliot for the rest of my life. And my life took a little turn, and I found myself in this pretty, you know, what felt very bizarre for me situation of I'd just had a child. I was in this lull between graduate school and getting a job. And I had never really written fiction. I definitely always created things. You know, was obsessed with photography in high school, and I made short films in college, but I really did not write fiction until I had this new baby and I had this sort of intense emotional experience that I needed to put somewhere. And I started writing the book that ended up being my first novel, If Then. When I started writing the books that were, you know, sort of part of my DNA at that point, were the novels that I had studied for 6 years in graduate school. So that was Dickens and George Eliot and the Brontes, Anthony Trollope. Those were the books I had spent a lot of time with. And so I don't think I sort of was deliberately writing in the vein of any of those, but definitely all the things that I had learned in school about character and theme and plot development was part of, you know, my writing process from the beginning. I will say that right when I started writing my first novel, I had been not reading contemporary fiction for many years because I needed to, you know, read Clarissa, which is like the longest novel ever. And so I didn't have a lot of time to be reading things that were just coming out. But after I graduated, I started reading a few things that I had missed and I knew I wanted to read. One of them was Ishiguro's just novel, Never Let Me Go, which is still one of my favorite books of all time. The other was Tom Parada's The Leftovers. And they're both writers that tend to write within the, you know, realist genre, but they had taken this kind of slightly speculative slant. And I was really intrigued with the idea of doing something that was very grounded in reality. And this describes both my first novel and In the Quick. Something that feels very grounded in reality, very similar to your everyday experience of reality, but that it's in some way also removed from reality. And there's some sense of, you know, an escape or a sense of magic or a sense of strangeness.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. And I would imagine I'm not the only one who will relate to you sort of saying you kind of found your way to contemporary reads later. I feel like as an English major, I feel the same way. For so long, I don't think I was reading anything that was less than like 100 years old in all of my classes and even in my free time, because I just enjoyed it so much. And yeah, it wasn't till later that I started really digging back into contemporary reads. And that sort of made me wonder too, you know, I feel like we all have either a particular book or a genre that we sort of turn to as comfort reads. Is that sort of your Victorian novels for you? Is it contemporary stuff or beach reads, or kind of what's your comfort read?
My comfort read definitely is some very just specific books. Although I will say All of Austin is something I do tend to listen to those audiobooks whenever I'm going through a stressful time. They just sort of help me chill out. I adore the novel I Capture the Castle. And that's another one that I will come back to. Jane Eyre is definitely a novel that has been read many times. And I do sort of return to them. They're kind of old friends in that way. In terms of genre, I love a family drama. You know, I'm sort of a wide range reader, but I do, you know, love a book with heart. I think it can almost be any, you know, it could be speculative, it could be a thriller, it could be a family drama, but it's got to have a strong sense of heart for me. Otherwise I tend to just tune out a bit. And I'm not a person who finishes every book. So usually when I tune out, it's because I'm like not, you know, I'm not feeling that connection with the characters.
I love that. That's a great way of putting it. Well, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit about sort of your writing routine and maybe your reading lately as well, because I know these are sort of strange times for all of us. What is your writing like these days? Is it sort of fitting it in nooks and crannies? Is it hard to concentrate on writing right now? How's that looking for you?
So I went from having protected writing time while my children were in school. I wrote in the quick under contract, so I treated it as a job. I have a, you know, work town in my town, which is close to two independent bookstores, which is super handy. And I would drop my kids off and I would go and work. And I wrote in the quick fairly quickly for that reason. And last March, you know, basically all my writing time evaporated. And my kids have not been back to school since then. They've been remote, and one of my kids is only six, so remote school for six-year-olds doesn't work that well.
Yep.
Really, I've been homeschooling him. And I really had to go back to the way I wrote when my kids were babies. And luckily, I had written If Then, my first novel, under those conditions, because I had sort of developed kind of tricks to get things done, you know, in small amounts of time, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I used to write when my kids were napping. Now it's kind of like when they have their iPad time to do Minecraft, just my protected writing time. But I really have had to go back to, you know, not doing a whole lot of pondering, you know, reading, taking notes. I've really had to go back to this kind of faucet model of writing where you open up the laptop and you start typing, because otherwise, you know, as you probably know, you just right now, everyone's time is so kind of curtailed and it's very difficult to have, solitary time. So, you know, at any moment I'm going to get interrupted. So I really try to get going as quickly as possible. The other thing that's, you know, for your listeners that might be writers who are struggling right now, I mean, I think we all are. I think for me, the most important thing that I've started to think about over the last year is I've kind of changed my definition of what a good writing day or a good writing week is. And it used to be that I say, I need to generate a certain number of words, or I need to finish this chapter, or I need to figure out what's going on with this character by this date. And I sort of have had to develop a different attitude. And I don't, you know, I think that there, it isn't just bad things that have come out of that. I think I've been forced to slow down and really make it the priority, not so much to produce, but to just stay connected to the project. I'm working on my third novel right now, and I count a good writing week if I have stayed kind of tapped into that world and those characters. And there's a lot of ways that you can do that that don't involve, you know, typing on a screen, because, you know, so much of our days right now are dealing with screens. I'm dealing with my kids' school on an iPad, and, you know, I'm doing something for my editor for In the Quick. And I really had to find ways to make writing feel fun. I've been doing a lot more working with visuals, making Pinterest mood boards for the novel. I've been doing a lot more handwriting. You know, I tend to write, I do my best writing right now after everyone's gone to bed. And I don't love to stare at my laptop before bed. So I've been sort of writing out whole scenes in longhand in a notebook, which is something I have never done before. I was definitely always a laptop person for all of my other books. But this book is being largely handwritten. It's kind of interesting what's coming out of that. It's not all a bad thing.
Yeah, I love hearing the behind the scenes, and I'm sure other aspiring writers will as well. And can you tell us anything about the next book yet, or is that still all top secret?
No, yeah, I can say a little bit about it. I'm feeling grateful to have started a book a couple of months before the pandemic hit, and I kind of settled into the main character. And I've been really thankful for her, because she's this, like June, they're very different characters, but like June, she has this persistence and this kind of resilience, which, man, do I need to spend time with a character like that right now? I mean, that's the kind of energy I need in my life right now. So the novel is actually set in Oregon, where I live, similar to my first book, but it's set on the Oregon coast, which is a very sort of blustery, foggy atmosphere. And it follows a mother and a paramedic and the secret that she uncovers that threatens her family.
Interesting. Well, you know, I always just love to end by asking what authors are reading themselves. Are there any recent reads you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Yes, like many readers, I have been completely soothed by Catherine May's Wintering. The subtitle is, let me remember, it's The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. Going back to what I was just saying about having a kind of different standard for what constitutes a good writing day, that book really kind of explores, it's like part memoir, part kind of cultural history of the way different people and cultures have taken the idea of wintering or sort of retreat, times in their lives when they've needed to step back either through illness or, you know, we're all experiencing that right now in a pandemic, either, you know, actually in wintertime or within sort of a metaphoric lives, and how, you know, sort of these dormant moments in our lives don't necessarily have to be a bad thing. And that just because a tree is bare doesn't mean there isn't a whole lot of potential there. And that, you know, my writing will have springtime again. So that book has been a really soothing and inspiring book. I've definitely been gravitating towards things right now that are sort of part sort of betwixt and between, like part memoir, part cultural history. Loved Bonnie's Suey's Why We Swim, which is also sort of a part cultural history of swimming and human beings' relationship with water, and part memoir of how she got into kind of competitive open water swimming.
Interesting. I keep hearing about the wintering one too and haven't picked it up, but that sounds kind of like the perfect thing to be reading right now. So I'll link to that.
It's really like the right book, right time for me. And I'm sure it has been for a lot of other people too.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I will link to those and all the books we mentioned and to yours in the show notes. And this was so wonderful to hear all about your reading and writing. And I hope listeners go pick up In the Quick, and we'll look forward to the next book as well. And best of luck with all of your events coming up. And I'll link to your website as well, so people can check out any virtual events that are on the way.
Yes, you can register for all my virtual events through my website. And your listeners can find me on Instagram at Kate Hope Day, or on Twitter also at Kate Hope Day.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Thank you so much. It was such a fun conversation.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.